In this special edition of Focus on Africa, we're talking about Ebola, and if you want to take part in the conversation, it's already started on our BBC Africa Facebook page. You can also send us a tweet. The address is at BBC Africa, and some of you already have been sending us text messages as well. If you want to do the same, the number is +447 786 20 60 75. Now, today, what we want to do is actually hear your thoughts and concerns on the current outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus, which has already claimed lives in parts of West Africa in what the World Health Organization describes as the world's deadliest outbreak of the virus. Now, we know that Nigeria managed to quickly curb the spread of the infection, but Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea have failed. And that led to the declaration of a global health emergency and the need for intervention from around the world. So how will you assess the handling of the Ebola outbreak, and what are your concerns about Ebola where you live? We want to hear from you. Is your government and the world doing enough? And as we wait to hear from you, I'm going to start here in the studio with Professor John Oxford. He's a virologist at the University of London, and he's here to answer some of your questions about the spread of the infection. We'll be throwing some of the questions you've left for us on our Facebook wall and by Twitter as well to him, so he can explain them to us in very simple layman's language. Professor Oxford, many thanks for joining us here on this special edition of Focus on Africa. Was it inevitable that this outbreak of Ebola will be, you know, as deadly as it has proved currently?
No, I think it took us all by surprise. It certainly took me by surprise. And I suppose maybe the problem is we spend too much time looking backwards rather than looking forwards. And when I look backwards, I could see that there's been an outbreak of Ebola every other year somewhere in West Africa for the last 40 years. But they've always been very contained. You know, 100 people here, 200 there, 50 there. So all the expectations, I think, were that this would be the same. But suddenly it began to change. And I suspect the viruses are still the same, but Africa itself has changed.
Was the challenge with this particular one the fact that there was a delayed reporting after he had broken out in Guinea?
I think there was. Now, the reason for that, I don't understand it. But, of course, it is, you know, as I say, we've been relaxed about it, because in the past they've always dried up, these outbreaks. They've always kind of been self-contained. But this one, I suppose there must be more mobility now in Africa than there was. Maybe the population's bigger and so on. So that could explain why the virus is more mobile. It's not blowing in the wind or anything like that. It's going along with people as they move.
From what we have seen so far, Professor Expert, would you say, is it too soon to suggest whether or ask if any lessons have been learned about managing the spread of this particular virus? It's a very vicious one.
I think the big lesson is you've got to get it quickly. One thing that will happen, I think, with this intervention, if you put it that way, with the United States, you know, all the troops coming in, hospitals being built, and the same with the British Army and so on and so forth, there will be infrastructure. I think they will nail this virus over the next weeks, certainly over the next 2 months. I think they'll finish it off for this outbreak. But, of course, there will be another outbreak. And I think one of the big things will be that those countries will inherit some infrastructure that can be then used for the next outbreak and get at it quickly, identify it with molecular virology, and get moving, and that will stop it spreading.
We want to get in as many questions as possible from our listeners across the continent who are listening to the program right now. Let us start off with William Kokulo. He is in Monrovia and actually lost a friend to Ebola. William, we can hear you now. First of all, you've lost your friend to Ebola. What happened? I'm afraid we don't have William on the line at this particular moment. We should be returning to him when we can bring him up. Prof, you know, the question keeps coming up, you know, because you're talking about the need to deal with this as quickly as possible. I mean, how quick can a government, can health authorities be in responding to this?
I think quite fast. Once the government knows that this virus is on the move, rather than Lassa, it's not malaria, it's not cholera, you know, it is Ebola. And that's not easy to do a clinical diagnosis. But with these modern molecular methods that are being used now, you can get the answer in a day, and it back comes a bit of tape and says, this is Ebola. Then you can react. Then what you have to do is move the Ebola cases out from the community and put them in specialised units to look after them. But the main thing is to move them out from the community and so break the chain of infection. And the second thing is to kind of alter in some sort of way, at least for the time being, the traditional way of burying, which itself leads to further infection at the burial time. I know it's quite awkward and difficult in some of those societies in that area, but it will have to be done, even as a temporary measure.
Let's find out how it has been dealt with and whether, you know, people, for example, listening to us in Kenema in Sierra Leone have been satisfied with the way the government responded to, because we know Kenema has been in quarantine for some time now because of the virus. Yunisa Patrick Kamara is joining us from Sierra Leone. Yunisa, you've been affected by events there. Have you been satisfied with the way, you know, authorities have responded in isolating the situation?
Well, I would say yes, and then I would say no. Initially, when it started, government, the initial reaction of government was sloppy. Remember, Ebola is a brand new disease. It has never come to our part of the world. But our government has done exceptionally well in the last 3 months. And the government declared quarantine Makeni, as I talk, Makeni, Bomaliti Street, and Potoko 50,000 at quarantine. And they have instituted a national lockdown. They have mobilized resources. I think to a very large extent, government has been doing well, given the resources in terms of manpower, money, and material. They have done...
Given the limited resources, really, we should say, you think they have done satisfactorily, but what ought to have been done that you think hasn't been done, observing things
well,
in Kenema?
Initially, it is, when Ebola started in May, I would have imagined they should have tackled it there and then when it started in the 3rd district in Thailand, but they mismanaged the situation. Ebola is a scary disease, so they got panicked. I would imagine if they had attempted to fight it from Thailand, it would not have reached this dimension in which almost every district apart from Kwanadugu has been affected. And today in Makeni, the district health management team buried 9 people. Every day people are dying. October has been a disaster. From the 1st of October to today, over 500 people have been affected. Here in Makeni, we bury at least 3 or 4 people every day.
All right, then, Yunisa, let me pick up from there and bring in William Kokula, who's joined us from Liberia. William, what's been your assessment of how, the response has been as someone who's been affected in Liberia?
Thank you very much, Akwesi. Thanks for this program. From the initial state in Liberia, there was several problems. From the beginning of the fight against Ebola, there was difficulty in picking up sick patients and dead bodies from the street. But I think the Liberian government have overcome those challenges. And right now, there is a tremendous effort by the government in tackling this virus. There's improvement in the fight against the deadly virus. So I can regularly say that the government is on track with the help of our international community and out of the United States government. I think we are on track. The death rates have dropped a little bit. Where the virus originated from Guinea, crossing over to Foya, there has been a low death rate right now. And then what the government is doing is trying to stop new infections right now.
At the beginning, though, William, there was a bit of resistance, wasn't there, from the public to the government's announcement of what people should be doing, changing funeral practices and so on and so forth. Why do you think there was, or what accounted for that sort of resistance that you saw?
Yeah, I think at that stage we were still in the denial stage. That is that many traditions and many religions did not believe that there was this disease exists. There was existence of this disease. But right now, with the public education from our health ministry and that of our media, I think every sector of our community now understand that Ebola is real and they need to take the necessary precautions in fighting the deadly virus. I think that was the mistake during the past. But right now, I think the public information, the public is aware of this deadly virus, and I think everybody is taking precautions in fighting it. And we can only fight it by stopping new infections.
Let me bring that to Professor Oxford here in the studio with us. Professor Oxford, why do you think there was so much resistance?
I think with new diseases, wherever you are in the world, there's sometimes resistance. I mean, you know, we could all say, oh, we would have done better. Well, maybe we would and maybe we wouldn't. And I can look back to the 80s when HIV began to spread, and there was a lot of feeling, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. It's kind of disbelief and that sort of thing. So I think no country is free of it. It's kind of must be a human trait. But I'm glad that to hear that you are free of it. And I think also, I feel the Americans, I mean, they had some bit of, you know, setting up library, didn't they, after the, after the slave trade. So they're taking a bit of responsibility in Liberia, and I'm pleased to see that. So you're going to be the beneficiary of some new hospitals, the 3,000 American soldiers putting up hospitals. I saw the pictures, and that's rather good. And I think that will give everyone a morale boost and also help look after, more importantly, infected patients.
And so speaking of responsibility, you've seen similar for the British in Sierra Leone and the French in Guinea as well. We've been joined on the line by Dr. Nonso Omuenugwe in Anambra State, Nigeria. Doctor, I hope I have pronounced your surname correctly. Nigeria seems to have, you know, done something right. Where do you think you went right in containing or dealing with Ebola?
Good evening, everybody. Now, the success recorded in Nigeria was majorly courtesy of two factors. One was the cooperation between government at all levels, the federal and the state government. And secondly, you know, the way Ebola was tackled in Nigeria, it was an holistic approach. Both the private institutions, religious institutions, traditional organizations, everybody was involved. The awareness was created at an unimaginable level. So it was able, like, people were able to get the right information at the federal government level. Okay.
You talk about the right information. Pardon me, Dr. Omuenugwe. Yes. You talk about the right information going out. Practical things. Let's talk about that. What practical information went out? What was the public listening to or being asked to do that made a difference, do you think?
Now, what made a difference? People were made to know that the importance of what. Early detection of the disease, the importance of what reporting the disease via the right channels, that's through Ebola hotlines, the importance of what isolating cases, the importance of what that there's a chance of you have a high chance of recovery when you report the case to via the appropriate channel. Now, the federal government and state government, they had an information center, an Ebola information center. Now, that information center gives information virtually every day, every hour. Let me give you a good scenario. There was a myth that if you bathe with salt water, you would get well. That information spread very fast. But now, with appropriate information from the right authority, they were able to counter that. Some spiritual leaders said it's a plague from God, this, that, that. Now, with the right information, people were what? Enlightened. Understand? What I'm telling you is, even in rural areas, you can imagine how people were eager to know what people knew. Now, let me give you another typical example. My aunt in the village, I was with her through all this because I love my state. She asked me one question. Are you telling me if your relative is not feeling fine, are you just going to abandon the person because you suspect Ebola or something like that? Now, those questions are similar questions, I believe, are being asked in probably Liberia, Guinea, and so many other places.
Let me come in here and bring in William Kokulo. William, are those kind of questions being asked in Liberia if you have a relative who you suspect has a disease? You know, what do you do? Are you just going to abandon them, or are you going to try and get them to a hospital at the risk of being infected yourself?
The public information given by the health ministry right now, if you have your relative affected by the virus, that is, you should call the hotline. And previously, the problem we had is that the hotline was those people on the task force, that is the hotline, they were slow in responding to picking out patients. But right now, I think there has been improvement in that. I think they were slow because we were facing the issue of logistics problems. I think the issue of logistics has been addressed based on the numerous contributions by other international NGOs and good countries, good countries to Liberia. Mm. So I think that problem is being resolved. Right now, we have a quick response team coming to the aid of sick people.
William, a practical question: how do people get to the hospitals these days?
If people get to the hospital by the means of ambulance coming for them, but ordinary sicknesses, people still ride the Vera Texas, they get into the hospital. But again, we might not know which type of sicknesses the people have. That is, and that's why they always we have the public information telling taxi drivers and bus drivers and other moving vehicles of what type of patient they should take in their car. And I think we are on track with that public information, which was previously lacking, and we are doing well in that.
Let me ask the same question to UNISA in Kenema. Have there been concerns about how people can practically transport themselves to hospital for care? I mean, do you have enough ambulances to do the job, or are people hopping onto taxis?
Well, William said initially, people used to go to hospital on Okadas, but in the last 1 month, there is an ambulance which takes people from their houses, and some walk on foot. The contact tracing is doing extremely well. They go to extreme villages. Yes, ambulances are available now. They are helping to take people to the hospital.
Professor Oxford, is that a challenge?
Yes,
is there a concern there?
Yeah, I was very pleased actually to hear that, because I think that's one of the differences before with the outbreaks. Taxis have suddenly come in to the scene here. Now, obviously, with a taxi, if you get an Ebola patient and that patient's sick in the taxi, then the taxi man would find it impossible to sterilise, to clean the taxi, really. And the inclination would be to just brush it down and get on to the next person to take.
Mm. And how long does the virus live in such conditions?
Well, it could live for 24 hours. It could live for 24 hours. I mean, as we've heard, and that was a very nice point that you brought up about having a bath in soapy water. I mean, soap and hot water will kill this virus, but it would still be quite a big job to kill the virus in a taxi. And so I think it's a very good change that you've made, that specialised ambulances or people walk into hospital or come in a specialised ambulance. That an ambulance will be one where you could clean it out and disinfect it between patients. So that could make a lot of difference, actually.
You're still listening to Focus on Africa on the BBC World Service. This is a special edition of the program looking at the African and global response to the Ebola epidemic that has ravaged parts of West Africa, specifically Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. It's coming up to 19:24 Greenwich Mean Time. Let's bring in Demu Cisse. Demu is a Sierra Leonean here in London, but was in that country up until August, now in London. Demu, are you confident in the way the government has handled this epidemic up until this point?
Yes, thank you very much. The government is doing its best, and they should continue to work with the international partners to train more health workers to go to all areas in Sierra Leone. When the Ebola started, we had difficulty in accepting the fact that Ebola is a deadly disease. Mm. There were too many deniers. People don't even know that you can get Ebola through just body contact. And we still are in denial. And if we
You don't think that challenge has been overcome at this point now, do you?
I think we have overcome it, but not 100%.
What do you think needs to be done to deal with this denial then?
The denial is we should continue to deal with it, educating people every day, every now and then, because it is difficult for especially Sierra Leoneans to understand the gravity of certain things.
And besides the issue of denial, Denu, quickly, what is your biggest concern now going forward and dealing with this epidemic in your country?
My biggest concern is that I really feel sad about the situation. It has disrupted all the developments the government has started, especially road projects. It's we heard that all mining companies are no longer producing, which is very bad for the economy. And this, we should also plead with the British government to kindly fast-track the vaccine. Ebola will be difficult to contain without preventive measures, and the vaccine is needed. The Zima drug, we don't know what is happening, but the vaccine they had shown us, I wholly hope and pray that the British government will fast-track it.
Let me raise Professor Oxford on the question of the vaccine. Is that a realistic expectation? What are the prospects?
Well, I agree with Denu, that it would be lovely to have a vaccine, but the chances of that happening are zero for this outbreak. There might be an experimental vaccine by the time the next outbreak comes. And, you know, I'm sorry to put it that way, but to a virologist like myself, you know, this one is this one, but I'm also thinking about the next one. Mm. It still is, though, that this sort of virus, like other viruses we know, can be contained by the contact tracing and breaking the virus by hygiene and social distancing. So it means a lot of quick observation on the people who've got it and then isolating those persons. So this basic public health business can halt a virus like Ebola. That's always going to be the first way to do it. And then secondly, there will be the possibility of a vaccine. But in reality, I think that vaccine will be directed towards healthcare workers, not used in the general public. So nurses and doctors. But that will give them confidence to keep working and do their best. So, you know, it's been slightly shattered at the moment, I would say.
Now, as briefly as we can, William Kokulo, what is your biggest concern at this moment going on?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. My biggest concern is that Ebola has affected every sector of our country, from the economy to the political area. And if this Ebola continues, my biggest concern is Ebola, this is likely lead Liberia to another constitutional crisis, because we should have gone to midterm senatorial election by tomorrow, October 14th.
Right.
But due to the outbreak of the Ebola virus, that is being postponed to a date that is unknowing. And because if that is not done, we will have a serious constitutional crisis that will
right.
be more political.
Right.
There will be a collapse of our economy.
William, thank you very much. Dr. Nonso in Nigeria, what is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, I will recommend that with the global solidarity against the disease, it can only yield more impact in an informed environment, in addition to and what effective leadership trusted in the local populace of affected communities.
All right, then, Dr. Nonso there in Nigeria, many thanks to you, Professor Oxford. Many thanks for joining us in the studio. Time is not our greatest ally at the moment, but you can listen to or download our twice weekly Ebola public health broadcast. It's on every Wednesday and Friday. Many thanks to you for listening. We're back on Thursday with another interactive edition of Focus on Africa about Ebola. And do keep the conversation alive on our Facebook page, BBC Africa, and the same for Google Plus and BBC Africa on Twitter. But of course, we're back tomorrow starting 15 GMT. I'll be on the hot seat with the very latest news, analysis and feature from the continent. And there are more stories online at bbcafrica.com.